bureaucratic and egotistical interests. And that whole tidal wave of socialist, communist, you know, state-run responses is still, you know, still going on in Cuba in a much different way, but it's by and large has sort of left the world stage, and so we're left with a different scenario. You know, I don't know, is it anarchist? Is it what is it? I don't know. I guess that's a subject for another show. Didn't talk much about the Wuhan lab leak hypothesis. I think it's very interesting. I would encourage people to go to the New York Magazine from January 20-something here of January 4, 2021, written by Nicholson Baker, I'm sorry. Very interesting, amongst many other interesting things to talk about. I guess I'm all out of time to talk about stuff. I thank everybody for listening and encourage people to keep listening and supporting KBO Community Radio as we go into our spring membership drive tomorrow. Yay! See you, everybody.
Hold your head up. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
KBOO Portland. KBOO has a number of special t-shirts we've created just for you during our month of special programming. Whether you are a metalhead, a punk rocker, a bluegrass fan, or a feminist, we have a t-shirt for you. Wear it proudly in support of KBOO Community Radio. Go to kboo.fm/t-shirts to see all the designs. All proceeds go to support the work of KBOO Community Radio.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, we focus on the trial of Derek Chauvin, the Minneapolis police officer who is charged with the murder of George Floyd. The Office of Attorney General for Minnesota is Keith Ellison. They are overseeing the trial. Ellison is a former elected official who was part of the Congressional Black Caucus. The defense for Chauvin is being backed by the Police Legal Fund, who are providing him with a dozen lawyers and $1 million. Meanwhile, Minnesota has a long history of police-involved deaths, with over 200 police-involved deaths in the past two decades. And although Minnesota is only 7% Black, Black people are 26% of police-involved deaths. These include Philando Castile in 2016 and Jamar Clark in 2015. But thus far, the only police officer in the state convicted of murder is Mohamed Noor, a Black officer who was found guilty of killing Justine Damon, a white woman. Meanwhile, the House of Representatives passed the George Floyd Policing Act, which bans racial and religious profiling, but it has yet to be passed in the Senate. Let us go now to a summary of opening statements on the trial that began on Monday, March 29th.
On May 25th of 2020, Mr. Derek Chauvin betrayed this badge when he used excessive and unreasonable force upon the body of Mr. George Floyd, that he put his knees upon his neck and his back, grinding and crushing him until the very breath, no, ladies and gentlemen, until the very life were squeezed out of him.
And you will learn that Derek Chauvin did exactly what he had been trained to do over the course of his 19-year career. The use of force is not attractive, but it is a necessary component of policing.
You will learn that he was well aware that Mr. Floyd was unarmed, that Mr. Floyd had not threatened anyone, that Mr. Floyd was in handcuffs.
When you see these videos pulled back from afar, you will be able to see the Minneapolis police squad car rocking back and forth during this struggle. This was not an easy struggle.
Can you describe what you saw of Mr. Floyd's condition as time progressed here?
The more that the knee was blockly on his neck and shimmying as it was going on, the more you seen Floyd fade away and slowly fade away, and like the fish in a bag, you seen his eyes slowly, you know, pale out and again slowly roll to the back of his eyes.
Well, you're gonna learn that it was about a counterfeit $20 bill used at a convenience store. That's all. You will not hear any evidence that Mr. Floyd knew that it was fake or did it on purpose, that the police officers could have written him a ticket and let the court sort it out. Even if he did it on purpose, it was a minor offense, a misdemeanor.
What was Mr. Floyd's actual cause of death? The evidence will show that Mr. Floyd died of a cardiac arrhythmia that occurred as a result of hypertension, his coronary disease, the ingestion of methamphetamine and fentanyl, and the adrenaline flowing through his body, all of which acted to further compromise an already compromised heart.
This was, for example, not a fatal heart event. This was not, for example, a heart attack. You will learn that there was no demonstrated injury whatsoever to Mr. Floyd's heart, as in a heart attack.
And following George Floyd's murder on May 25th, 2020, protests broke out across the United States and on every continent around the world. It is estimated that 26 million people participated in the protests. And now all eyes are on this trial, with many waiting to see if justice is possible for Black people living in the United States. Justice itself seems to be on trial. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. And today, our guest focusing on the trial of the police officer who murdered George Floyd are Karen Kutson, who is president of CWA Local 7250, who has been active in protests in solidarity with George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement. He is based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Also, Mick Crenshaw, who was born and raised in Chicago and Minneapolis. He currently resides in Portland, Oregon, where there have been continued protests against the George Floyd murder. He is the Northwest Regional Director of Hip Hop Congress and the People's Attorney, Nana Jumphy, attorney, consultant, educator, activist, and president of the National Conference of Black Lawyers. Let us go now to our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. A man who was among the onlookers shouting at a Minneapolis police officer to get off George Floyd's neck last May returns to the witness stand today. Donald Williams is a former wrestler who said he was trained in mixed martial arts, including chokeholds. Williams testified he thought former officer Derek Chauvin used a shimmying motion several times to increase pressure on Floyd's neck. He described seeing Floyd struggle for air and his eyes rolling back into his head, saying he saw Floyd slowly fade away. Police dispatcher Jenna Scurry testified she saw part of Floyd's arrest unfolding via a city surveillance camera and was so disturbed that she called a duty sergeant. Scurry said she grew concerned because the officers hadn't moved after several minutes, and she at first thought her video had frozen.
My instincts were telling me that something's wrong. Something has not right. I don't know what, but something wasn't right.
Scurry said in her call to the sergeant, "You can call me a snitch if you want to." She said she wouldn't normally have called the sergeant about the use of force because it was beyond the scope of her duties. The head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, made an impassioned plea to the country as coronavirus cases continue to rise and even as increasing numbers of people are vaccinated.
I'm going to lose the script, and I'm going to reflect on the recurring feeling I have of impending doom. We have so much to look forward to, so much promise and potential of where we are, and so much reason for hope. But right now, I'm scared.
Walensky said cases of the virus are up about 10% over the past week from the previous week to about 60,000 cases per day, with both hospitalizations and deaths ticking up as well. She warned without immediate action to slow the spread, the U.S. could follow European countries into another spike in cases and suffer needless deaths. She urged people to please limit travel to essential travel for the time being, and to observe coronavirus precautions. More than 20 heads of government and global agencies have called for an international treaty for pandemic preparedness they say will protect future generations. European Council President Charles Michel first laid out the idea of a pandemic treaty at the UN General Assembly in December. He followed up on that plea today, saying the coronavirus pandemic has taught the world a brutal lesson it must learn before the next pandemic.
No continent can defeat a pandemic alone. It requires a global approach, the us rather than the me, and a collective commitment at the highest political level. The next pandemic is not a question of if, but when. So we must be ready, and we have no time to waste.
Despite the World Health Organization's calls for patents to be waived during the pandemic, rich countries have continued to oppose efforts by poor countries to compel them to share vaccine manufacturing technology that would address worldwide vaccine scarcity. The vote counting begins today in the high-stakes union organizing drive at Amazon's massive facility in Bessemer, Alabama. The National Labor Relations Board is expected to take a few days to tally the nearly 6,000 ballots. Laura Ross-Sprout Tellum reports.
Nearly 6,000 employees are deciding whether they'll be the first of Amazon's 400,000 workers to join a union. The implications are big. If the workers vote to become members of the retail, wholesale, and department store union, it'll be a huge victory for the labor movement, whose numbers have been dropping for decades. And if the union loses, it would force labor organizers to rethink their strategy, particularly in tackling big tech companies. Amazon union supporters say the pay in Bessemer does not adequately compensate for the constant pressure workers face, including high physical demands and minimal breaks. Amazon argues its $15 minimum wage is twice the state minimum, and it offers health insurance and other benefits hard to find in low-wage jobs. The union says about 85% of the warehouse workers are Black, and has linked the labor organizing to the struggle for racial justice. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Laura Ross-Sprout Tellum.
Critics of Georgia's new Republican-backed election law have issued fresh calls to boycott some of the state's largest businesses. Leaders of the African Methodist Episcopal Church in Georgia are sending a letter to 90,000 parishioners. The letter calls for a boycott of Georgia's largest companies if they don't speak out more forcefully against the law. Bishop Reginald Jackson is calling for corporate leaders at companies like Coca-Cola and Delta Airlines to speak out in opposition. I'm Eileen Alfandari for Pacifica Radio.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. On May 25th, 2020, 46-year-old George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis, Minnesota by white police officer Derek Chauvin. Floyd, a Black father of three and grandfather of two, was killed during an arrest after a store clerk claimed that he used a counterfeit $20 bill. Chauvin, one of the four police officers who arrived on the scene, handcuffed him and slammed him face down on the street. Three other officers, Tutao, Thomas Lane, and J. Alexander King, restrained Floyd, and another prevented passersby from defending George Floyd. They have also been charged with aiding and abetting second-degree murder and aiding and abetting second-degree manslaughter. Chauvin proceeded to kneel on George Floyd's neck for what we now know was 9 minutes and 29 seconds, preventing him from breathing. As he was pinned under Chauvin's knee, George Floyd repeatedly cried out for help and said that he couldn't breathe. During the final 2 minutes of him being pinned down, George Floyd was motionless and had no pulse. The Minneapolis police took no immediate action to directly treat him, and Chauvin kept his knee on Floyd's neck until medics arrived. Following George Floyd's murder, Chauvin was fired and charged with second-degree murder. An additional charge of third-degree murder was later added. In the following weeks, protests and systemic racism and in solidarity with Black lives erupted in cities across the United States and around the world. Protests began in Minneapolis, but quickly spread to over 2,000 cities and towns in over 60 countries, according to The Guardian. Some polls have estimated that as many as 26 million people participated in the protests. In major cities like New York, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C., police suppressed protesters, often in violent ways. And in Portland, Oregon, unidentified federal officers wearing camouflage used unmarked vans to detain protesters. The uprisings were also suppressed by violent right-wing militias, as exemplified by the bloody shooting in Kenosha, Wisconsin, that resulted in the death of two protesters. By March 12th, 2021, the Minneapolis Police Council approved a settlement of $27 million to the Floyd family following a lawsuit. Now all eyes are back on the case of George Floyd and on systemic racism as a trial of Derek Chauvin is underway. Chauvin's murder trial opening statements began on Monday, March 29th. This has become one of the most closely watched court cases in decades. The trial began with opening statements from both sides, establishing the groundwork for both legal teams as they present their arguments to the jury. Jerry Blackwell, the prosecuting attorney, turned the jurors' attention to the viral video of George Floyd's arrest, in which he is seen being choked to death by Chauvin. During the first session, Blackwell reportedly said, "You can believe your eyes that it's homicide, it's murder." Blackwell also told the jury that Chauvin's didn't let up and didn't get up even after George Floyd repeatedly complained that he couldn't breathe. Chauvin's defense attorneys laid out their strategy as well, which many say will involve the jurors evaluating tons of evidence outside of the viral video. Before we welcome our first guest, let us go now to a reaction now from activists on the ground in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as the trial began.
Hey, hey, ho, ho. Say Derek Chauvin has got to go. Hey, hey.
You know, I really want to be optimistic, but I've been doing this for a long time, and so unfortunately, I'm not feeling like, I don't want to hype myself up for justice, you know?
The whole system has got.
I'm expecting to see George Floyd criminalized and potentially the officer walk. It seems like the city is expecting the worst or preparing for the worst, so that's what I encourage everyone else to be prepared for the worst. Anything better than that comes, that'll be a pleasant surprise.
I think what's different now is that the cameras are in the courtrooms. People, attention and eyes are on the injustices that we've been raising attention to. One of the things that the community is very cautious of is the fact that Officer Chauvin is on trial, not George Floyd.
Came down here for justice and a conviction. I have my attorney Crump with me. We're here just hoping for the best.
Alrighty, so let's welcome back to Sojourner Truth Mick Crenshaw, who was born and raised both in Chicago and Minneapolis. He currently resides in Portland, Oregon. Mick is the lead U.S. organizer for the African Hip Hop Caravan and uses cultural activism as a means to develop international solidarity related to human rights and justice through hip hop and popular education. Mick is the Northwest Regional Director of Hip Hop Congress. Mick Crenshaw, welcome.
Thank you, Margaret. I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm well, and good to speak with you again. Now, first, give us Your reaction. You heard protesters out there on the ground. Of course, protesters in Portland have been, I think, perhaps the longest stretch of protests following the George Floyd murder. But give us your reaction. You know, some people are skeptical about if justice is possible. Others are very hopeful. What are your thoughts now as the trial begins?
You know, on one end of the spectrum, we could say I'm cautiously optimistic, but honestly, if I really check in with my gut feeling, it's more of an anxiety because I don't expect justice to be served. I feel like the asymmetry of the court system in this United States, even though there's a number of black jurors, is something that impacts the way that people's decisions are made. My heart goes out to the people on the ground who stand for black liberation and who stand against police terror and who stand for justice for the people, because what I'm afraid and what a lot of me is predicting I'm going to see and that we're going to see as a country is a decision that falls short in terms of the type of justice that the people actually want. And it makes me think, Margaret, about some very simple, almost primal things, in that they were on that brother's neck. They were on George Floyd's neck for over 9 minutes. You know, I've also learned how to do blood chokes that restrict blood to the brain through restriction of the carotid arteries. I've been trained by people who train police officers who told me that 30 seconds will put you to sleep and 3 minutes will cause you to be brain dead. They did that for 9 minutes plus. I would ask that Derek Chauvin have somebody do the same thing to him, and let's see what happens. And the other 3 or 4 cops who participated in the death of George Floyd. Lastly, I just want to say they're going to try to make this into the defense is going to try to make this about George Floyd's history of drug use. And if everybody who used drugs recreationally in this country deserved to be choked to death, then we would only have a minuscule fraction of the population.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'd like to do, Mike, if you're able to stay with us a few more minutes, if that's okay, I'd like to welcome a guest who is now based in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Kieran Knutson, who is president of CWA Local 7250, who has been active in protests in solidarity with George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement. Kieran is based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Kieran, thank you for joining us. Okay, I'm not hearing Kieran. Is he on the line?
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here with you and Mike.
Okay, so a similar question to you, Kieran. You're right on the ground in Minneapolis, and I'm wondering your thoughts as the trial begins. As I said, some people are cautiously optimistic, some people are skeptical, and as Mike says, all of us, probably black people across the nation, other people of color, we're all feeling pretty anxious about this. Kieran, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that we have to understand that the only reason there are charges against Chauvin in the first place is because of one of the, you know, biggest uprisings in modern history in the United States. So that's what it took to even bring charges against Chauvin and the other cops that murdered George Floyd in broad daylight on a city corner with a crowd of people watching. So when we're talking about American justice, that's the first thing we have to understand, is that's what it took to even get charges put against him. I do think the system understands that millions and millions of people are watching this case and that there's a great risk to not delivering some kind of justice for this murder. But the only thing that can ensure that, I believe, is the continued vigilance of millions of people to make sure that we won't accept anything less.
Right. And what we'll do now actually is just go, Karen, to a clip of what happened in Minneapolis of the George Floyd family and activists gathering outside the courthouse.
They can't sweep this under the rug.
Come on, PJ.
George Floyd, Philando Castile, they were all killed by officers that were sworn to protect us. America is watching. Just like this press, many shows, court TV, they will display everything. Just like when that man had his knee on my brother's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. It was a motion cinema picture. Everybody seen it.
I was watching the video, not to disgust myself or get myself furious. That was the last time I could hear his voice. You know, so I watched it. Every time I watched it, it seemed like it just got me, it made me stronger, because I knew, yeah, they murdered him, but we still Floyd strong, and we still here. That's so right. We gonna hold it down for him. You know what I'm saying? And they say, trust the system. They want us to trust the system. Well, this is your chance to show us that we can trust you.
Chauvin is in the courtroom, but America's on trial.
All right.
America's on trial to see if we have gotten to the place where we can hold police accountable if they break the law.
They're gonna talk about, as much as they can, about his record. But his record isn't an issue.
All right.
Because this is the trial of Derek Chauvin.
He's taking a knee for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. And we want you to think up during that time why Chauvin didn't in that time get his knee up.
All righty. And then just a short piece here, and then we'll get comments from both of you on the street scene now on day one of the trial.
Security personnel are on high alert during the trial. Protesters want to show Floyd's family support by calling for racial justice. David Schumann's live in downtown Minneapolis right now. David?
The march is starting here right now as we speak, after several speakers took the microphone and talked passionately about justice for victims of police violence and accountability for police. They also spoke to a crowd that is standing behind a banner in the street that says justice for George Floyd and all stolen lives. The organizers of this event here have made clear why they're out here protesting. Demanding a conviction of Derek Chauvin with the maximum sentence is first and foremost. There are also bigger picture systemic issues they're protesting for, like passage of police reform legislation and creating a community board to oversee police for greater accountability. One man said he feels nothing has changed in the last 10 months since Floyd's death, and he wants to know his family will be safe from police. About the trial, one of the organizers said she felt the first day went well for the prosecution. There's a strong sense of unity here, a lot of different groups coming together for this, and in fact more than 20 Twin Cities organizations came together, teamed up to put this on.
All right, so Karen Knutson, who is based in Minneapolis, Minnesota, your thoughts first on this. I mean, in the first clip you heard some of the words of the family and, you know, of saying we are still Floyd strong. Also, America is on trial. That was Sharpton. And also people saying, you know, if you want us to trust the system, this is your chance to show it to us. Your thoughts on that, and if that's very much the feeling on the ground, Karen, and also if you feel anything has changed since George Floyd's murder.
I think that people here very much have a lot of love and sympathy for the Floyd family and what they've been through. And it's incredible to think about the sort of what they had to witness in terms of a loved one being lynched on video by state authorities. I don't think people here have confidence that the Minneapolis Police Department has changed. I think it's still It functions in a similar way. It's had to sort of scroll back its activity in the city since the uprising in order not to provoke people more, but it still continually there still continues to be incidents of police brutality even since George Floyd was murdered. And so people don't have confidence in the MPD to be a tool of community safety. It definitely is not, has not regained its legitimacy in the city since the uprising.
Yeah, and also to ask you, Karen, because, you know, I mean, millions of people protested around the world. I think something like 2,000 cities and towns, over 60 countries. I mean, rural areas in the U.S., like Southern Illinois, that formerly areas that were known as sundown towns, you had smallish protests, but nevertheless, they were happening there. Are you feeling now that perhaps a sense of complacency has set in, or people's attention span has gotten a little shorter? You know, because at least thus far, we haven't seen the turnout, at least in the numbers, as has happened after the initial murder. And do you think that people are just kind of waiting and seeing how this is going to unfold with the trial? Your thoughts?
I believe you're right. I think people are waiting to see what will happen and seeing if any kind of justice is delivered through the court system. And, I mean, I think that is one of the functions of the court system, is to, in the way it plays out in this country, is often to drag things out for a long time and take agency away from people in the streets. But in Minneapolis, the area where George Floyd was murdered, 38th in Chicago, is an area both Mike and I know well. That area is still occupied by